Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Undivided is brought to you by the founding sponsor, 1530 Mortgage. We have a great conversation coming up for you later in the podcast about homelessness and specifically the homeless crisis that's happening on the West Coast. We are in Seattle, and certainly there has been a worsening homeless crisis here for years. We're going to talk to two citizen organizers who are trying to combat the homeless crisis in both Seattle and Portland because the government has so far proven incapable of doing so. Here's a clip of that conversation.
I'm very excited and involved with the We Heart Seattle and Portland movement because change is happening right now. You've seen it. I've seen it. We've all seen it. And yes, we still have to deal with the activists here and there. But the fact is, to me, they represent the past, right? They're a dying breed. Things are changing. Things are getting better. I do see this.
There are 750,000 Seattleites that are fed up with the way their city looks. Wake up. Let's do it through litter picking. Direct action as a strategy. But instead of tearing down our city, we're building it up and cleaning it and galvanizing the community using positive direct action strategy.
And one of the great takeaways from our chat, which we'll have to close out the show today, is that activists, the loudest voices in the room who have been driving the conversation and the policies in cities like Seattle and Portland, are starting to lose their grip on the people in power. That's a good thing, and it means that regular common sense citizens are starting to take hold and starting to take their cities back. So stay tuned for that conversation. I want to start the show today with what might be controversial. I don't know why everybody's so, not everybody, I don't know why some people are so worked up about Juneteenth being a federal holiday. Maybe it's because of the way that some businesses choose to acknowledge it, like Walmart coming out with Juneteenth ice cream, or like Seattle's famous Pike Place Market leaving just the BLM lit, although it looks more like MBL, which I'm not sure what that stands for. But I fail to see the controversy in Juneteenth or June 19th being a federally recognized holiday. There's a lot of things that I think the government does to virtue signal or to be woke, but this isn't one of them. In fact, and this is going to be controversial, I believe that Juneteenth is more important than Independence Day. I said that. I'll say it again. I believe Juneteenth is more important than July 4th. And here's why. Our country could not begin to live up to its promise until every single person here was free. Our country was built on the concepts of freedom and liberty. But how could those concepts truly come to fruition until there was no slavery? Now, admittedly, I didn't even know what Juneteenth was until a few years ago. It's not something I recall being taught about in school. I mean, what I remember being taught is Emancipation Proclamation. All the slaves were free. And that's obviously not the case. Juneteenth marks the day when troops rode into Galveston, Texas. It was June 19th, 1865. This was 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed and 2 months after Confederate General Robert E. Lee surrendered to General Grant at Appomattox. But news of General Lee's surrender had yet to reach enslaved people in Texas. And so when the federal troops rode in and read a declaration saying that all slaves were to be free, that was indeed the first time, I believe, that this nation was able to begin to live up to its promise as a country to ensure that everyone here could have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So I hope you'll join me every June 19th in recognizing and reflecting on the importance of this day as the day when our nation truly began to live up to its full potential, and not just a day to sell Juneteenth branded ice cream. I talk a lot on this show about one of the tenets of Undivided. One of the things I believe is absolutely critical to bridging political divides in this country, to giving common sense a comeback, and that is putting actions before affiliation. It means that you judge people based on what they do and what they say before you consider their political party. And I think if we can do that, we can always be consistent in our moral compass. And we're not, you know, giving leeway to someone whose politics we agree with when they act in a way that's just not right. And so when you have examples of politicians who do put actions before affiliation, I think it's important to give them a little credit where credit is due. In Washington State, there is an insurance commissioner, and his name is Mike Kreidler. Now, Mike Kreidler has been in the news a lot over the last couple months because there have been accusations of him bullying staff, of him using crude and sometimes what some considered racist language against staff. And all of this came to light. Now, one of the staff members who had come forward to file a complaint against Mike Kreidler was abruptly fired when he returned from a medical leave. This is some reporting that was done by the Northwest News Network. They've really been leading the charge on this reporting and doing some really important stuff. Now, after this employee, John Noski, was fired without any apparent reason, someone who had filed a complaint against Mike Kreidler, accusing him of being antagonizing towards staff and of bullying him, well, Democrats, again, politicians of Kreidler's own party, started to join calls from Republicans for him to resign. And in my experience covering politics, it's important, yes, to keep the other party in line, but it is just as important to keep your own house in order because it sends a very important message. Washington Governor Jay Inslee, a Democrat, is among those now calling for Mike Kreidler to resign. Governor Jay Inslee wrote in a statement, "Commissioner Kreidler assured his employees and the public he would work to improve his relationship with staff, but instead he terminated an employee who spoke out about these issues." Importantly, the Washington State Democratic Party has called for Kreidler to resign, as has the ranking Democrat in the Senate, Senate Majority Leader Andy Billig. This is important. And I don't think we can underestimate that. You might say, well, it's an insurance commissioner in Washington State. This is sort of a one-off story. It is very rare, I think, these days for political parties to go against one of their own, to go against a sitting Democrat in this instance, and to say, we're going to have a consistent moral compass on this issue. And if it were a Republican, we'd be asking them to resign. And so we're going to ask Mike Kreidler to resign. Now, Mike Kreidler has rebuffed these calls to resign. Quote, "I cannot comment on the details of an individual personnel matter, but the conclusion that an important and valued employee's departure was because he filed a complaint against me is not true and does not reflect the full context of the story." So Kreidler is saying that there's some details around this termination that he's not at liberty to discuss, which is either true or it's true, but also very convenient for him. His statement went on to say, "I take full responsibility for my past behavior and recognize the impact it has had on those around me and the people I serve. I have pledged to do better and stand by that commitment. At the same time, I intend to continue serving alongside the dedicated people of our agency and to work on the important consumer protection issues ahead." So all of that being said, kudos to Democrats for having consistency on this and putting actions before affiliation. I've talked a lot about the crime crisis in this country, the public safety crisis that's out of control. It's not just impacting big cities anymore. I've talked about it particularly here on the West Coast. And I have come to believe that there is one thing more than anything else right now that needs to happen to help change course in this country. And that is the resignation or the recall of LA District Attorney George Gascón. George Gascón is the poster child of the progressive movement to reimagine policing and to reimagine the criminal justice system in this country. A movement that has proven deadly, a movement that has proven dangerous, and a movement that has proven to be just as stupid as the slogans sounded. There have been several high-profile incidents in the last couple months that have really raised a red flag about the need for Gascón to go. And that is a woman and her child who were hit by a car that was driven by a criminal who got a slap on the wrist sentence from George Gascón. That woman who actually voted for Gascón ended up speaking out about him.
Sends messages to criminals that, you know, it's okay to do bad things because we're not going to punish you. We're going to punish the victims instead.
And then more recently, two police officers in the city of El Monte, California, were shot and killed by a felon who also got a slap on the wrist sentence from George Gascón. This is reporting from Fox's Bill Malusian. Per sources, the gang member who fatally shot two El Monte PD officers was on probation for felon with a firearm after he received a bare minimum sentence in a plea deal under LA District Attorney George Gascón last year, despite having a previous strike on his record. The parents of one of those slain officers, Joseph Santana, spoke to Fox News.
It's not fair. Gus Bolt needs to be recalled immediately. He's destroyed so many lives.
Under intense criticism now, as he deserves to be, LA District Attorney George Gascon released a statement about the violence that is happening under his watch. He wrote, "This has been a terrible week in Los Angeles. We lost two police officers and another was shot and injured. The fallen officers were husbands, fathers, and friends. We know that the families are hurt and devastated by the loss of a cherished family member. Our hearts break for them as they face this Father's Day weekend without their loved ones. Our office has and will continue to hold people who commit violence accountable for their actions." That is absolute bullshit and salt in the wound for these family members. George Gascon is not committed to holding anyone accountable for their behavior. And that has become painfully clear. Now, why do I believe that the most important thing that can happen for public safety in the United States is for LA District Attorney Gascon to either leave, which is unlikely, or to be recalled? Well, it's because I believe that he represents everything that can go wrong when you put identity politics before people's lives. And I firmly believe that once the people of California and Los Angeles County, no less, stand up for themselves and remove him from office, that it will send a strong message to any other Gascon wannabes that the light on crime experiment is over. One of the challenges right now that's going hand in hand with public safety is homelessness. We're in Seattle. Obviously, we have a pretty profound homeless crisis. Portland isn't any better. In fact, it's probably worse. A lot of places in California are dealing with a homeless crisis as well. And there are some civilians who have said enough, who have said the government has proven completely incapable of dealing with this crisis. And so we're going to take it upon ourselves. There is a group called We Heart Seattle. There's also a branch of that called We Heart Portland that is made up of citizen organizers who took to the streets, and it really began as kind of trash pickup to kind of beautify the cities and deal with this crisis. And it has evolved into something much, much more. I spoke with two of the key players. Andrea and Kevin from We Heart Seattle, thank you for being on the podcast. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you.
Hi, Brandy.
First, just introduce yourselves. Andrea, why don't we start with you? What is We Heart Seattle and who are you?
I'm Andrea Suarez, the founder and executive director of We Heart Seattle. We are a grassroots movement founded in Seattle in 2020 for a more beautiful and safe city for all to enjoy. We use a daily boots on the ground approach to remove trash as a form of harm reduction in our homeless encampments and help people get off the streets.
Kevin, who are you besides vigilante justice? We'll get to that momentarily.
I like that. I'm Kevin Dahlgren. I'm the president of We Heart Seattle. I got involved a couple months later after hearing about Andrea from a friend who said, "There's this lady in Seattle that reminds me of you." So I've worked in social services for 27 plus years, primarily in the Portland metro area. And so relatively close. And I got involved because I was just really inspired by what I was hearing Andrea's doing. I was like, I have to encourage this behavior. I have to help her grow because this was just too good to be true. I've been looking for someone like her for many, many years. Someone who just had that same type of drive and relentlessness about her, who also just is hardwired to do this. And as you know, to do stuff like this, it's very hard to find that person. So once I heard about her, you know, drove up to Seattle and met her and was like, wow, this is a good match.
Yeah, a dynamic duo. So for people who aren't familiar to the dynamic, you guys have become controversial. Activists don't like you. Activists don't like me either. They don't like a lot of people. But can you talk a little bit about whether that climate has gotten better or worse for you when it comes to pushback to what you're doing?
In some ways better, in some ways worse. You know, I will say this about Seattle, as I've done this a long time, and I always, you know, thought, wow, Portland, a lot of activists, a lot of drama. This is just a big old S show. But then I went to Seattle, and after my very first visit, I told Andrea, this is the most radicalized city I'd ever been to in my entire life. I couldn't even believe it. And then over the next year and a half, I just realized Seattle is very unique. I know they have issues in other cities, but there's something about Seattle that there's this very coordinated, organized effort by these individuals. And if they decide that one day they don't like you, they make it very well known. And so that was difficult in the beginning because we're just trying to do good work, keep our heads down, do litter picks, do outreach. And we're like, why are these protesters keep showing up? It didn't make any sense. Now me, I'm always like very like open arms. Let's meet for coffee. Let's talk, because, you know, I've always said this to, you can't just accept a person's other point of view. You have to understand that point of view. I always believe that you have to understand why they believe the things they do. So of course I immediately was like, hey, let's talk, right? Like, I think maybe we have a lot in common. I mean, you're here too. So that means you possibly care, right? And they have so far now, almost 2 years later, refused to even have any type of normal conversation with us. It's mostly just been 99% yelling in our face. And we don't get that. And lately, it feels like there has been a little bit of an uptick again. Just 3 weeks ago, Andrew and I were shopping in Costco for supplies and ran into two activists who started filming us and flipping us off. We're just in Costco. We're nowhere near a homeless person. And we were very calm, right? We didn't let the emotions take over, because also it's like, this is our personal time. We're trying to do, I mean, sort of personal time, because we were actually shopping for the homeless, but we weren't like in an encampment. And once we got outside, I very respectfully turned around and said, can you tell me why you're flipping me off? And his phone is in my face. And I could very much tell he was looking for a negative reaction so that he could cut it down to that 3 second clip where I told him to do something, right? And I knew this. So I was just like, hey, let's talk. What do you want to do? And he goes, well, okay, what do you want to talk about? I says, well, you flipped me off in Costco. And he responded by saying, well, what are you going to cry? And yeah. The moment I heard that, it made me think about that movie, A Christmas Story, with Ralphie and the bully Farkas, because that's what Farkas did, is after he threw the snowball at him and Ralphie's like, what just happened? He looked at Farkas and Farkas says, what are you going to cry? These guys are bullies. That's what they are. They are bullies. They don't want to talk. They don't want to have a normal conversation with us. And so we've kind of learned over time just to kind of ignore them, because engaging with them and trying to get them to change their minds, I now believe at this point might be impossible.
I agree with you. It's probably impossible.
But the thing is, we're still open to having that dialogue, because the fact is, this isn't getting anything done. And because they half the time or 90% of the time do it in front of the homeless, it's counterproductive. Because now the homeless are like, what the heck? What is going on?
Yeah.
Like they don't get it.
So talk about the arc of what happened. What was intimidation, you know, the flyers, the showing up with, you know, umbrellas in our faces, has now turned into a very well paid for website called We Heart Seattle Exposed. And not that I want all of your audience to go click on it and read it, but it is full of, I mean, it makes the National Enquirer look like a book of facts. It is a compilation of twisted and turned events about me and We Heart Seattle that are unbelievable. And yet they're paying Google to have that be at the top of the search. And when volunteers or donors or your audience go to like Google Andrea Suarez, Kevin Dahlgren, We Heart Seattle, that is what pops up. And I don't want to spend my donations on advertisements, right? I want to spend it on dump runs and supplies and getting people into housing and their cell phones and ordering their documents so they can get back to work. So all they're doing is harming the homeless by thwarting our good efforts. Why are they doing that? Just go on record. Why are you mad at us for removing trash? Why are you mad at us for trying to get people to go back to work? Answer the question.
Andrea, can you try to articulate to the best of your ability the other side's position on you, the activist position on you? Why, from what they've told you or screamed in your face, why don't they like you?
Well, first off, I will say, I think that the controversy is manufactured.
Oh, I agree.
We say, you know, we're controversial. We're not controversial. It's manufactured. But they put me into this bucket when I called their efforts enabling. And I'm enabling doesn't have to be a dirty word. They made it a dirty word, but it is a fact. And even level-headed anarchists will admit, yeah, we enable people to stay alive and thrive in parks. But that cast me into this, she's on the wrong side of history, she's over here, she's too right, whatever. But that was the day, you know, January 1st, 2021 in Miller Park, when mutual aid and activists and the like were serving hamburgers on top of rats' nests. I'm like, at least pack in, pack out. And then that spiraled into Andrea makes people pick up trash for basic needs, which again is nothing I ever said, although I don't think it's a bad idea. I mean, why not empower people? People thrive when they have to do something to get something. That's how we evolve as a society. And that just goes against their ideology. It really comes down to, you know, I'm getting rid of the blight that they need to be there to meet their political agenda.
Yeah, and these activists have been clear. They want people to stay in place. They don't want there to be quote-unquote sweeps of homeless encampments, no matter how many times the city goes in and offers services beforehand. They believe that that's their weird, twisted idea of compassion. And clearly, it's not compassionate, and clearly, it hasn't been working. And so, you know, you guys don't want people to stay in place. They do, and I think that's where the conflict arises. But, Kevin, you mentioned the word bully and intimidation. I don't know if you saw this. Jonathan Cho, who, of course, is a former Seattle TV reporter, he's now doing independent work covering specifically the homeless crisis. He's got, I mean, talk about childish. Somebody plastered stickers all over Capitol Hill saying, Jonathan Cho is a wet bitch. So all over Capitol Hill. And it's like, can you bring the conversation any lower than that? So that's why I say these aren't people who want to have any sort of reasonable conversation about how to actually help human beings. But in that regard, and Andrea, let's start with you. It started with kind of trash pickup. But from there, you guys have started to, as you've articulated a little bit, directly help unhoused people get access to services. Can you talk about that sort of arc in what you've been doing?
Yep, sure. January 4th, I was on a litter pick in Queen Anne, and a man came to me in crisis, asked to use my cell phone. We started dialing numbers to get him, you know, connected to family. He found out his father had died of COVID. His family wouldn't let him come home to the funeral unless he was clean. And so I worked with him over the next few days to get him into a bed at Valley Cities and stayed with him. Once he was discharged, we picked him up, got him a bus ticket. He made it to the January 16th funeral, and I'm still in touch with him today. That is case management, continuation of care, walking with somebody through their journey from crisis to sobriety, to recovery, to self-sufficiency. And that was the day I reached out to my board and I said, I'm going to start housing people. And I started learning who all the service providers were. I built relationships similar to what Kevin did in his city. I found out who wanted to work with me. And they saw that I was out there hustling, and they liked the fact that I was picking up trash and also engaging our homeless community to pick up the trash with us and offering them a basic needs stipend to do so. And that just snowballed into now it's over 120 people off the street on a nickel, right? I'm accessing, you know, the Salvation Army, Africa Town. Sometimes I'm getting external referrals into other housing projects, tiny houses, backyard, you know, adult foster care home programs, Tickets Home, 6-month rehab programs. And I'm just, every single morning I get up and I walk out my door and I'm like, I'm going to, you know, there is housing. There are places for people to go. You've just got to, it's a hustle. It's hard work. But since then, you know, we've raised money to be able to continue to do this. We have boots on the ground, outreach navigators out 7 days a week, including myself. Kevin comes up twice a month. We're also working with, you know, people who are trespassing on private property, breaking up major syndicates now and chop shops and major, major open air drug scenes. And we're really in the belly of the beast, Brandy, at this point.
And is it fair to say that you guys are operating outside of the sort of cog of Seattle's homeless, official authorized homeless response?
100% outside of it.
100%. You work within the system, your hands are tied. There's virtually... You can't really get anything done. And this is why, you know, we've really discussed that right now we're not completely comfortable accepting public funds, because then we got to follow those rules. The rules like the 20-foot rule, or what we can and can't do or say or what.
Can you explain the 20-foot rule?
Well, like you know, there's 20-foot rule and there's the slope rule and there's the other rules, is that technically speaking, most people are not supposed to be within 20-foot of an active encampment, meaning just to avoid them, make them invisible people, respectfully give them their space, you know? And that would make my job very difficult from 20 feet away to yell, you know, this is Kevin Wehart, how are you, right? Like, we walk up to the tent and we do the welfare checks to assume the person in the tent needs and or wants help. And help is a dirty word in Seattle. Apparently you're not allowed to use that word. Help implies that they need help. And if you imply that makes them the victim or something, right? But of course, I've done this long enough to know if someone's in a tent in a public space, whether they think so or not, they need help. And so I'm going to be assertive and I'm going to work them through their ambivalence and help them change their mind.
Well, and the reason that help is a dirty word is that, and why people don't like me going back to that, is Andrea is using her power to help somebody in a harmful way, because you're so only supposed to support people. You're only supposed to meet their needs where they're at, leave them where they're at. Solidarity over charity. How dare you go into a camp and tell them where they can get dental extractions or a job? Most people, I mean, we just employed a man who's a 9-time convicted felon, including attempted murder, who is now working for me. He had no idea he could actually go down and get a job through second chance employers. And so he remained a criminal up until a few days ago. And I'm like, you don't have to live the life of crime, dude. There are options out there. And the social service cog won't tell people about these services. It's like the activism has infiltrated the cog. Mark Dones is at the helm of the cog and first and foremost is an activist. And they don't want to offer all of these solutions to empower people. It's very, very frustrating and very odd and only harming our unhoused community.
And for people who aren't familiar, Mark Dones is the head of the Regional Homelessness Authority, which I actually got a chance to meet him and chat with him. We had a nice conversation, and we talked at the time about getting him on the podcast, so I'll have to reach back out and see if we can make that happen and talk about the quote-unquote sanctioned response to the homeless crisis. Now, you had mentioned, Andrea, you know, going in, breaking in syndicates, breaking up criminal syndicates. That brings me to you, Kevin. We're on a call today because I saw a video yesterday of you chasing down on foot a car prowler. Can you give me the backstory there?
Sure. I was in Portland, Oregon, doing a litter pick with Wehart Portland. And we are kind of finishing up early afternoon. And I was less than 10 feet away from this Ford expedition and heard that loud boom. And I knew that was the smash into the window. And so I was pretty darn sure exactly this was a smash and grab. Fortunately, I was holding my phone and it happened to be turned on. And I immediately just pointed my phone at the expedition and took a photo and got this million-dollar photo of a guy running literally from the SUV holding the bag, right? And without even thinking, I just pursued him. I think I was just fed up knowing that if I don't stop him, it's not like I'm going to be able to call the police. He's going to be long gone. And, you know, there's really not that many officers out there. And this isn't considered a emergency because it wasn't really a person-to-person crime. So I ended up pursuing him and chased him for a couple blocks. He dropped everything, but I decided to continue to follow him just to kind of see what, you know, to really understand, you know, how is he so comfortable to do this so blatantly in the middle of the day in front of everybody? I mean, there was 50 people around. And what I discovered was just this very organized, coordinated effort with multiple people involved. And so after about block two, once he realized I was still following him, but at this point I was just walking and he was walking, other homeless people out of the blue started approaching me and stopping me. One lady knocked off my hat. Another lady tried to steal my phone, which I learned was one of his accomplices because if you watched the video, my video camera has to be on, I'm like, this lady's trying to steal my phone. They then walked off together. And so then I backed off about a block to, you know, act as if I just gave up. And as they turned the corner, another homeless person came out of nowhere, holding a blanket, put a blanket over them, and they went up into a ball. I'm like, wow, this is organized. They have done this hundreds of times. And then once they realized I was at the blanket, they jumped out and ran towards a car a block away. And once they realized I was at the car, he ran off alone. And then I pretended again that I was nowhere to be found and I gave up. I watched this incredible transformation where he took off his shirt, he cut his jeans into shorts, he took off his shoes, he stashed everything. And literally within 15 seconds, he looked like a completely different person. He has done this hundreds of times.
The video of that in the photos, for people who are only listening to this on the podcast, not watching, you got to go watch the video because, I mean, he literally shears off his pants and then it's all set down on the sidewalk. And it's just amazing to see.
And now as he did that, another older homeless lady, tried to block us and then grabbed half his clothes. So everybody knew each other. Everybody knew what's going on. And my thought is there's all these accomplices. They've probably done this hundreds of times. And there, for I assume there was probably a spotter who found the vehicle, told him about it. He was the smash and grabber. And then there, I say there was four people. There was probably 10 who were all within a 10 block radius preparing for this to happen. Because also it felt going down to Portland, downtown Portland, it feels very lawless at times, much like Seattle. And it's very frustrating when you call the police and it's just like they don't respond that quickly. And I will share this. And I've done podcasts with like Mike Solon and stuff. And we believe strongly in public safety. Right after the smash and grab, one of my volunteers did call 911, was on the phone with him for 24 plus minutes. And finally, a cop sort of arrived and my volunteer showed up and he said, oh my, and within 20 feet of the person walking away and stuff. And the cop responded, well, you're not the victim. There's nothing I can do. And that was very frustrating because we are the ones that witnessed it. We saw him. He's right there. Can you at least go talk with him, maybe run his name, whatever? And they wouldn't do it.
Wow.
And this sends the message to these individuals. Wow. All I have to worry about is people like Kevin, because no one else is going to do anything. And they were probably shocked that I chased him.
You have a nickname now, Kevin. It's Kevin Bagman Dahlgren.
Yeah. But that's terrifying. And that's the lawlessness, is that sent a message to them that you basically, why not do this every day?
It also identified that not every tent is a home. And this is something that I've been talking about a lot during this journey, movement, that the system, the cog won't, they'll talk about it underneath their breath, that these tents that we see throughout our communities, in this case, this was a safe tent. This was a tent that was used so people could commit crime all day and hide the goods, ditch the bag, ditch the boxes, the Amazon packages, and then go sell it at a fencing market or whatever they're doing with it. There are trap tents. You know, I cleared probably, I don't know, I've probably cleared 25 trap tents in the last few months in downtown. If it's empty and there's a needle in a chair, it's gone. I don't care. That's not a home. And I'll go on record with that. And I've told it, Councilman Lewis, these are not homes. These are not down and out residences. These tents are used for storage, trap tents, safe tents, toilet tents. And they are revolving doors.
Really quickly, when I hear that, I imagine that the activists or the city aren't going to like that. Because if it's trash, it's one thing. Are you allowed to remove a tent?
I actually work directly with the dealers. I have a very strong working relationship with the people on the streets. And I'm like, hey, those tents on Fifth, are those yours? Yep. Okay. They're going to get rid of them by the end of the day. And usually they'll get rid of them for me. And then I just call out like, hey, all of that trash, all of that mound and hoarding, is that yours? Yes, that's mine. You can clean it. I've got a tiny house now. Like, I have a bit of a authority on the streets now and in the encampments because I'm respected. Why? Because I don't enable people. I empower people and they actually feel loved and cared for and respect that I'm working hard and there's dirt under my nails for it.
And I just want to, for the record, Kevin, I don't recommend people chase after criminals. I don't want to make people think they should. I understand how people are fed up and might, but I want to, for the record, don't chase after criminals. And I'm worried about your guys' safety all the time. Same with my friend, Jonathan Cho. I want to talk about whether you guys see there being any political progress right now. Kevin, can we start with you and be specific to Portland? Because Ted Wheeler came out after being just fringe left in 2020 and not doing anything to help his city. Now he's saying, oh, there can't be homeless camps around highways. He's doing more sweeps. What do you think this change in tone is the result of? And do you think it's hopeful?
The result, I think, is us and others. I think really it's over the last year and a half, 2 years, common sense is starting to return. I know the city of Portland leadership pretty well, certainly some of the city councilors, and the best way to know change is happening is looking at the elections. People with more moderate type values in liberal cities are getting elected. That tells me common sense is returning. And that's happening right now in Portland, Oregon, where we also have some pretty, some activist type city councilors that are now in the run for their lives because there's moderates who are like with like 59% popularity over them. So Portland is fed up because it's lawlessness in downtown Portland and they're tired of it. Citizens who have been voting liberal their entire lives are now willing to vote candidate, not party, for the common sense person. And I've seen that change and it's really great to see. And yes, Wheeler has really kind of stepped up lately, as Harrell has in Seattle, with sweeping people, out of the parks, off the sidewalks, which is, by the way, they'll never get their needs met. And so I am seeing that shift. That shift has occurred. And I think that's making it harder and harder for the activists. And, that's probably why they haven't paid as much attention to us lately, is because there's too much else going on at all the major parks, in Seattle and Portland. So the shift is happening.
Andrea, same question for you. With Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell, he's now been in office for 6 months. He has taken some steps to sort of ignore the activists and do some sweeps and focus on crime. How do you think he's doing? And are you hopeful for at least a slight shift in the city's trajectory?
I think he's doing great. I see a noticeable difference in our community. I see police presence where it needs to be. I was very pleased to see the fencing markets broke up on 12th and Weller and down on the Blade. I am hopeful, and I'm glad that the voters woke up in 2021, and people are. This is not the backyard that I think the silver lining of the pandemic was that we stayed home and became frustrated, and were able to see what our city looked like without the camouflage of tourism, and people were like, I am voting absolutely opposite of what the stranger recommended for the first time in their life, and that's just, the pendulum is just has to swing back and be rebalanced.
Yeah, and for people who aren't familiar, the Stranger is alt weekly in Seattle, and Kevin, you guys have your own version of the Stranger in Portland, right? What is it?
Willamette Week.
The Willamette Week. Gotcha. So those are the endorsements to avoid from those two publications.
Should we? Well, and Andrew and I learned that lesson because we were interviewed by them last month.
Oh, and I'm assuming the article wasn't kind?
More frustrating is that we naively assumed, since this reporter actually came out with us and observed the magic, watched us house people, watched us pick up the trash, notice the positivity, but still after all of that, and we had a really nice Zoom with her, she completely turned everything around like, oh my God, you're killing me. Like, she just did not want to see the good.
Yeah. And it was very, of course, the activist class, the activist radicalized, Twitter mob chopped that article up and we're just like, oh gosh, look at WeHeart parachuting into Portland, vigilante style, white saviors, and it was just like, how about yay? We picked up trash and got people indoors. Why can't you say at least you're getting people into housing? And I'm not talking transitional housing or a mat on a floor, like into fully furnished apartments. Like, just acknowledge that we are getting people to that point of self-sufficiency. It's just wild.
Yeah, I wasn't a believer in the idea of a homeless industrial complex for a long time, but I am firmly a believer in it now. And so that leads me to my last question. And Kevin, we'll just start with you. What would it take for you, if anything, to do what you're doing within the cog of the official authorized homeless response?
I'm willing and open to working within the belly of the beast for change to happen. And I'm okay, because at the end of the day, like, I know what I'm doing, and I'm one of the very few people with actual measurable results. I'm very good at this. And I would end up saving money. Like, if we focused all our energy on spending money on the permanent solutions right now and getting people off the streets, it would save us hundreds of millions of dollars. The industry I like to talk about on my Twitter is that there's entire industry to keep people comfortable on the streets. And I've seen this for 25 years. Enough is enough, right? If we put all those resources and no more band-aids and just said, like, I mean, seriously, we could permanently house every single person right now, and everyone would be like, oh my gosh, that's so much money. Is it? It's less money than what it costs every year to keep them on the streets. And so, yes, it's something I would do, but right now I'm very excited and involved with the We Heart Seattle and Portland movement, because change is happening right now. You've seen it. I've seen it. We've all seen it. And yes, we still have to deal with the activists here and there, but the fact is, to me, they represent the past, right? They're a dying breed. Things are changing. Things are getting better. I do see this. And so they're not as scary as people think. They just happen to be the loudest. They're the vocal minority. Andrew and I, the other, I calculated in Seattle, you know, as vocal as they are and all that online keyboard warrior stuff, I guarantee you there's probably like less than actually 30 doing it every single day, right? But there's thousands and thousands of us who maybe haven't already spoken up, but are frustrated. And so we have to remember there's more of us than them.
That's my favorite thing to say. And it sounds a little like schoolyard, but that's what actually made me start We Heart, was there are 750,000 Seattleites that are fed up with the way their city looks. Wake up. Let's do it through litter picking. Direct action as a strategy, but instead of tearing down our city, we're building it up and cleaning it and galvanizing the community using positive direct action strategy, like cleaning, community outreach. Everyone can say hello. And that, so I'll segue, assuming I'm going to get the same question with that being in the belly of the beast means I think you have to change some things, like the grant restrictions keep people homeless, mm-hmm. keeps a very large percentage of the people that are ready now or who are in a stage of change now, help that person who's hand up now, not through the cog, through the system, who's ready, when, priority pool, coordinated entry for all. That is the cog that keeps people homeless. We know there are dozens, if not hundreds, of open units throughout King County right now. They're open. I know, because I have people on the inside working these projects that are like, thank God, Andrea, you're out there exposing that we have openings, but we don't have enough staff to process the paperwork and get people in and progress them to the next step. And that is the crisis. It's the community, staffing crisis and the efficiency crisis. It's not about a structural crisis.
Well, I think what you guys are doing is great. I think the idea of not being, you know, it's easy for me to sit here and complain about the homeless crisis. It's one thing to do this. It's another thing to do what you're doing. I do want you to be safe. You know, I've been out there and just got a little tiny taste of what you guys deal with all the time. Kevin, no chasing down criminals, okay?
Okay, yes. I got in trouble by Andrea and others, but...
Okay.
But look what I learned. Yeah. This is more organized, and I'm glad I did this at least once. Is to realize this is a very coordinated, organized effort, and that people need to be aware of that. And basically watch your wallets, watch your cars, don't park in weird areas, mm-hmm. and just be very mindful of that. Look around. And it's unfortunate that the fact is not all homeless do this, but these group of homeless make all the other homeless look bad.
Were they homeless?
Yeah. And maybe that's true too, but you know, a few people make a lot of people look bad.
Yeah.
And so we have to remember that. And I just wanted to finish by saying, as far as the activists go, still after everything we've dealt with, we're willing to talk with them and meet with them and just find some kind of common ground just to stop the bickering, stop the fighting. I mean, it's so old. It's so childish. Like, my gosh, this is serious work. This is a humanitarian crisis. Andrew and I go out every day. It's very intense work. The last thing we need, which you've seen, Brandy, firsthand, is why are these cosplay kids showing up with umbrellas and masks yelling at us when we're trying to do good work? It's just a waste of time and energy.
I agree. But I also agree with your sentiment that the activist class is unserious, childish, and I do believe that they're losing their voice and their power and their influence in not only in Seattle and in Portland. And I think we can all agree that's a really good thing. So Andrea and Kevin from We Heart Seattle and We Heart Portland, I appreciate your time. And I think it was an interesting conversation, very enlightening. All right, we're going to end the show each Monday by getting to some feedback from you, the consumer. Kimberly said, of our new Friday segment, Friday with Friends, where I have an interesting friend to talk politics, I had Seattle radio host Dory Monson on. Kimberly said, love your new studio, Brandy. Happy that you and Dory, a Ballard guy, happy that you had Dory, a Ballard guy, on as your first guest. Anna said, love you both for using your brains that the good Lord gave you. Thank you for using common sense when the rest of the world is falling off their bike. I think in reference to poor Joe Biden. I'm going to cut him slack because I recently learned how to ride a bike as an adult. Jorge said, love your show. My favorite duo. You are two of the remaining true journalists in the Pacific Northwest. Let's see. I also launched a segment on Fridays called Florida Report. My sister, who lives in Miami, is going to be doing a report from Florida every Friday, keeping us up to date on what Ron DeSantis is doing, what crazy things people in Florida are doing. And so she's my Florida correspondent, a little bit of nepotism. I got some response to this. Carrie said, I feel like I'm sitting at a table drinking coffee with you ladies. Ken said, I want to go to Florida. I'm so damn tired of the commie coast. Okay. Tom said, how delightful. Two intelligent, classy ladies having a civil conversation. You got to have a civil conversation when it's with your sister. So I'm glad you guys are enjoying the new formatting. If you have any questions about it, give me a shout. You can listen to each show Monday, Wednesday, Friday, either on podcasts like you used to or as a video show. If you're on Patreon or Locals, that Wednesday show is exclusive to subscribers. So if you like this show, you want to support it, and you want to get a bonus episode every single week, you can do that by becoming a subscriber on Patreon or Locals. That's patreon.com/undivided or brandycruz.locals.com. I would love to have you as a subscriber and have you join our mission to give common sense a comeback. Thank you to the founding sponsor of Undivided, 1530 Mortgage. Visit them at 1530mortgage.com.